effect did the war have on student enrollments? Now, you had the Navy people, but the regular graduate students.
Well, we had enough lame, and I had one, Mike Raza, who did this. This was during the war. See, it was the 46, I guess it was. 46. He finished it in 46. I started way back in the 30s, but I didn't get it done. Typed and ready to go. His wife typed it for me. Mike had poor eyesight. He had to get a draft deferment. He was from Yale and from Connecticut. And he wrote and told them that he was my assistant. And what was my job? I was an assistant professor. They wrote back and said, a man who is an assistant to a fellow who's only an assistant in the first place can't amount to much. But they didn't dare draft him because he couldn't see without glasses. They wouldn't draft him anyway in those days. Mike did a good thesis with me, and he did a design problem with me for the gas processing industry, this absorber, new method of handling gas absorbers. I have it in the handbook. I had a round table of first generation immigrants, engineers. I'm a German. This is during the war now. I was the German, see. Mike Raza was the Polish. Chedi Slepcevic was the Serbian. Fred Karada was the Japanese. George Prekshot was from Latvia. We all were there, but George Prekshot got drafted and went to China. And he wrote back, he was on the Burma pipeline road where the motor fuel, not the, the jet fuel was taken overland for Chiang Kai-shek in a pipeline, and they lost half of it en route, and he was the patrol, one of the patrollers. He wrote me a card and said, nothing wrong with China but the Chinese. But I had a motor from Fred Carrada, Fred Depotman was with me there, and Maketa. I never knew why Maketa had a family. But these people, I had no reduction in doctorate work during that time. After the war, we got up to 235 graduate students, and we had a policy of not passing very many for the doctorate, so we would have mostly master's people.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, we had a large number of Navy, I mentioned. We had an influx of a large number of Indians. Had as many as 50 graduate students and Indians, or advanced seniors, to get their bachelor's. One of them was Homi Sethna. Sethna went back. He was a Parsi. You probably know the difference. And we visited him in Bombay in 1968, and he's been here since. He was designated as one of the outstanding 125 engineers at the 125th anniversary of our university, I believe it was. Anyway, he became head of the atomic work. He sat by Madam Gandhi when she announced the bomb. He was head of their atomic energy. When I went there, I visited him in Bombay. Then we went out to Trombay, and I gave a lecture to his people out there. And we've been in communication since 46. But we had 50 graduate students, and one of them was Tripathi, who went back to Benares, put up a school there. He was Brown's student, but he worked with me on a paper, too.
What about your other colleagues in the department during the war?
We had several of them who were reserve officers who got called. Faust was one. I took over his heat transfer, and I took over Breyer. Faust was in the test center in Arkansas, in charge of it. I guess Breyer was at another test center in charge of explosive. I guess the rims on shells or something. Pettyjohn went to the Navy, and he was the executive officer on the ship that went into Guadalcanal.
Somebody at the door, I think. Well, that door, I think.
Don't let it go. Let's see. Not too hard. So we lost several. H. White had been a reserve officer in World War One, but he didn't go. But you see, we had four out of, say, 18 of us go. And that's what they just have more effort to teach. I had children, and I was in the interim age, and the question never really arose about going. By 41, my children were 5 and 7 or something, you see. And I was always teaching students, doing things of this kind. If the war would have gone on, I would have taken on being the technical director of a synthetic rubber plant for Russia. But it never got off the ground. Of course, we were piloted.
How did that association?
Well, I don't know. Somebody looked for somebody and came to me, and we had a couple meetings about it, if we were going to build them in Russia, who would be in charge. But I didn't become involved because the war was too close to the end.
Was that from the Office of Rubber Reserve?
I think so, yeah. I did something on the Reconstruction Finance Corporation on the making natural gas into liquids, a study of that. The Carthage plant in Texas, and I visited and showed them. They didn't, of course, tell me that the price of gas had risen to the point where it's non-economical. Didn't come out that easy, but I was really looking whether if Gulf built a refinery using one of their gas fields and it didn't work too well, could they salvage the refinery as an oil refinery? And I looked at that problem for them, Reconstruction Finance Corporation.
I think you mentioned the Wolverine Tube Company somewhere along the line,
yes.
But you had a long association with
Yes,
that.
I did. Ed Young took over when I became chairman of the department. I gave it to him to kind of shed one of the responsibilities, and he did it. My son actually worked with him on it when I was a student. Ed had it until about 1980, one of the large, long ones. They gave us a very good experience. We were their technical heat transfer people. I would go and see field problems. We went to five places in the United States and gave 2 days of lectures on design using fin tubes. Had booklets and so on with it. And Ed Young went on and went on into the insurance consulting sort of thing. But it was a nice experience. We all had a book almost done on fin tube heat transfer, but I had two other books going and didn't make it finished. But we published some 25 papers. Condensation was known, we knew very well. Ken Beatty did a thesis on it. And we did a lot of good work. Dan Knudsen did his thesis on it. Don Robinson did his thesis on it. Don Robinson went to, of course, into the phase behavior work thereafter.
Was it at this time that you started to become more involved in professional organizations in terms of your activities within the organization?
Well, I did it early. I was very much impressed with the ICHE, although I didn't join them until 1937 when I got back as a teacher, but I did get their annual volumes. Someone, a friend of mine at Phillips, would buy the annual volume and sell it to me. I belong to, of course, Side of Petroleum Engineers. I'm a 50-year member there. But as a student chapter member, I was active. George Holbrook and I were on a committee for revising the curriculum for the department. Get rid of a couple courses, expand a couple others. And they eventually did happen. I came back by that time it had happened. I got the student chapter. You know, we had the first student chapter of the ICHE in Ann Arbor. A.H. White did it.
Mm.
I became secretary of the student chapter committee in the 40s, and I published the solutions of their problem, student chapter problem. And I did that, and then first thing I was on the accrediting committee, and then I forgotten what one, but anyway, I got to be run for council. I had to run a couple times to get elected. And at that time, I started the nuclear, I guess the nuclear division. I woke up last night and couldn't go to sleep, and it went through my mind, the reviewed. You know that we put on in Ann Arbor the first peaceful uses, a meeting on the peaceful uses of atomic energy of a scale. We had 1,200 people, 120 from other countries. 1954, I initiated the meeting. I was program chairman and did that. And then at the end of that time, American Nuclear Society had not been organized yet. And then I did a joint meeting through Engineers Joint Council, 17 technical societies, professional and technical societies, joined together for a Congress on Nuclear Energy in Cleveland in December 55. I was chairman of the meeting. There were 205 papers, and like ACS was involved, and a lot of others. And I was kind of commuting back and forth. It was a week-long meeting, and this kind of, I left it. I worked in the Oak Ridge the summer of 51.
I wanted to ask you about how you got involved in nuclear work.
They at Carbide were out getting professors to come down there and become involved. And I took the job in 1951 for 8 weeks. Was it 8 weeks or 12 weeks? I don't know. Anyway, I went there. I worked at the homogeneous nuclear reactor, physical behavior of fluids. Joe Smith and I wrote a paper for a bulletin from the Oak Ridge. I think it was on water, hydrogen-nitrogen relationships and phase behavior. And I got acquainted. One of the students did his doctor's with me on heat transfer down there. I worked on liquid metals earlier with the Mine Safety Appliances Company, and I wrote the liquid metals handbook for industry. And I was, of course, the liquid, I met Rick over. I keep a record of famous people I've met. I mean, I write a page about them or something when I think of it. But I met Rick over at his office because I was doing work for NAC, sodium, potassium, and lithium, at Mine Safety Appliances Company. I went to GE and saw their study of sodium. They jumped me one day and said, "Did I know I was talking about sodium in the nuclear reactors of a submarine?" And I said, "No." And I said, "Now that you've told me, I didn't know it before, see?" But anyway, then in 51, I can't think of the name of the man who was the director of the laboratory. It was also a man from Carbide who was in charge. And we went down in the spring vacation to be interviewed and went there, lived for either the 2 or 3 months. I guess it was only 2 months. But anyway, it was a very nice experience. And when I came back, I helped our school get a nuclear reactor by taking one of our men down there. But I got to understand this, and I was on the visiting committee at Oak Ridge and later at Argonne for chemical technology. Floyd Culver there, and can't think of the man name at Argonne. But anyway, they had me chairman of their visiting team with nuclear people. And the thing that's on my mind that I haven't done is that when they had the 25th anniversary of the formation of the Nuclear Society, not one word was in their article about Ann Arbor meeting. We got, and I'll have to find them, and I'm going to get Van Antwerpen or someone to help me write the article. I talked to one of their people, and they said, "You send us something and we'll publish it." But I had a mixture of chemical people from chemistry and mechanical and other engineering involved in this meeting, and I organized the nuclear division for the ICHE. And that's what got me into the activities, and I became a director, and of course I ran for vice president and made it, and against Paul Walter Lobel. I did Walter Lobel badly. I've known him when he was with Kellogg. I did him that, and then when he ran the second time, I started the petition to get Stu Churchill on the list, and Stu beat him. And But I hired him on a EPRI project, Electric Power Research Institute Study of Coal Conversion. I have a high regard for Walter. His wife was not in very good shape the last time I've seen him. It's a couple of years now.
You came back from Oak Ridge as chairman of the department.
That's right.
And how did that transition between Brown, who was chairman before you, is that correct?
Yes, he became Deed in the middle of the summer. And when I came back, I was never one who was anxious to be dean, be chairman, but I had to admit that I didn't want some people to be my chairman. And our selection of a chairman usually was after canvassing the views of the faculty. And I took the job, and I wasn't particularly good in getting new people in because I never had a budget when I knew I could go hire somebody. And it'd always be, we got some money, and I heard of somebody, and we hired some very bad people, Brown and myself. Yeah, it was not as good as we ought to have been. That was my weakness. The strength of what I did was to have an interest in each person. You know, I tell them that every person should want to have to see every other person succeed and try to help them. And for gosh sakes, never throw stones in their path to stop them. And that's something that isn't always true. Some schools, you know. I would say when you have difficulties at schools, usually it is that the people aren't willing to work together with everyone else and harmoniously and help each other. There is unhealthy rivalry. But I voluntarily gave up. I had a disagreement with our dean. The dean was going to, and I had disagreements with Brown before he passed away. Brown was a very capable leader. He made decisions by arguments. He'd argue with you. He and I had joining offices, or not a suite of four offices with our students, and we argued in my office a lot because he would come and see me. And when we did, the library was across there. They closed the door on the library after we were there a couple of years. But Brown was a very good man. But he, after he became chairman, he wasn't anxious to have people dispute him or talk against some proposal he had. Finally came to the attack that there was something that he thought highly of, that I was the only one left who would explain the reason why some people really weren't, but didn't say it. And when he became dean, he had one policy that I just couldn't accept, and that was that we were going to build new buildings, but not decide who the building would be used for until it was done. And that, to me, he had an associate dean that had that policy. Not only that, when he was going to build a building, he didn't put any offices in it. And I said, look, every man who walks into my door wants an office out of a laboratory. You've got to build those offices, or nobody will want to go there. And he did build a row of offices, but he didn't build enough. You know, it's been all carved up since. But so that, and we did things, and together, we had a book together, Natural Gasoline and the Volatile Hydrocarbons, and it was a very bad thing to see him go. He never admitted what he had. Family never acted that he had cancer. He was a man, you know, of 220 pounds, probably weight, and I saw him. I went to Europe the summer of 57 and came back, and I went to see him in the hospital. He probably weighed 140, was on a bed watching a prize fight on a TV, something he wouldn't have watched as a younger person. He wouldn't waste his time at such a thing. It was pretty awful to see. And he never said a word to me about how to handle the business of when he was gone. I had to deal with his son on it. He was a great leader in many ways, especially in the field of thermodynamics, of doing good engineering work for companies, of teaching thought process and thermal of understanding what he was doing. Very good.
What changes occurred in the when you became chairman? Did you have any specific goals that you set for the department?
Well, I don't think so. Brown had, in his last days as our chairman, had put through the book on unit operations. Each of us helped. I was kind of his... I was always his underling, so to speak. You know, I knew things he wanted and would want it done, so I would do them for him. You know, I helped him finish the book, although I didn't write too much of the text. And we had that fresh book early in those days, and this brought us a generous supply of students. We gave the order of 10% of the doctorates in the nation during a 10-year period when I was chairman, or 11 years during that time. We were paralleling MIT within we probably were 90% or 95% as many as they had. And our people were engineering-oriented. The president of the ICHE now was one of our students that did a doctor's degree with us at that time, you see. So these people were... We had a program. I wrote papers on such subjects as making a professional engineer without having all their effort into research, but of getting something of management, getting something of communication better than they were now getting, and making a doctor of engineering even. I made a proposal like that to the ASCE. I felt that our second year graduate courses that some of the master's men could take really made them so they were, well, I put it this way. We had a man call us once, and he'd had a young man, a master's man from us, go to work for him. And he was no outstanding student, just a good one, you know. He wrote and he said, "I've hired lots of engineers. I never hired anybody who landed on his feet and could be of use to us within the first 2-3 weeks, like your people did, your man did." And that was really what we had. We had design problems. I had, for example, a design of taking this propane and butane and so on out of natural gas after it came to Michigan from the Gulf Coast. I knew the people who were designing the two bidders. There were two bidders. The one bidder that lost the bid was a friend of mine. He gave me the losing bid design. I had that. We went to see the plant as it was built and watched this operation, and I gave them a course, and the design course was to select a process design, and I would present them the two and let them choose how they were going to do it. Now, we had that kind of a second-level design course for our people. We probably weren't geared yet into... Of course, I stopped being chairman in 62. We weren't geared into the computing, but I did get into the computing, which is a subject we should discuss sometime.
Yes, I have it on my list.
So I was really thinking of making each person do well, be successful, do research, do engineering practice, do good teaching.
We're almost at the end of this tape. It's almost 12:30. Do you want to take a break at this point?
It's all right with me.
3 hours.
Yeah,
it's up to you. I can continue.